It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
French police narrow hunt for Paris shooting suspects. UN report rules out genocide in Central African Republic. I'm Ray Kugel reporting from Washington. The search for two brothers suspected of being behind the Paris shootings is now focused on an area northeast of the French capital. Police have linked Saïd and Sherif Kaouchi, both in their early 30s, to the deaths of 12 people in the storming of the offices of satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo in Paris Wednesday. Lisa Bryant reports.
At a press conference Thursday, Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve described a massive search underway, helped by dozens of witnesses and information from videos and mobile phones. He said 9 people have been detained for questioning. Police described the two brothers as armed and dangerous. Sherif Kouachi was part of a jihadist cell and spent several years in prison. He reportedly has tried to join militants in Iraq. A policewoman was killed in a shootout early Thursday, and 2 people have been held for questioning. But Interior Minister Cazeneuve says there is no link at the moment between the 2 incidents. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Investigators say one of the 2 gunmen still on the run received terrorist training from Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen in 2011. But there is no firm evidence so far that Saïd Kaouchi and his younger brother Sherif were under orders from any terror group. A UN commission of inquiry says a Christian militia have carried out ethnic cleansing of Muslims in the Central African Republic, but that there is no proof of genocidal intent in the ongoing civil war. The 3-member commission issued its conclusions in a final report released on Thursday. This is VOA News. A Nigerian lawmaker says at least 1,000 people have been killed in the latest series of attacks by militant group Boko Haram. Senator Maina Maiji Lawan tells VOA that Boko Haram, in her words, went wild on Wednesday, burning homes in the northeastern town of Baga and surrounding villages. A liberal Saudi blogger who was sentenced to 10 years in jail and 1,000 lashes is expected to be publicly flogged after prayers today in the Red Sea coastal city of Jeddah. Raif Badawi was charged with offenses including insulting Islam. He's also been ordered to pay a fine of $266,000. Badawi's been in custody since his arrest in 2012. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel says sanctions imposed by the European Union on Russia for supporting separatists in eastern Ukraine can be lifted only if a ceasefire agreement between Kiev and the rebels is fully implemented. In remarks Thursday in Berlin at a joint news conference with visiting Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk, Chancellor Merkel said the agreement signed in Belarus's capital Minsk last September must be implemented in all its points before the sanctions can be removed. Indonesia's search teams are struggling with turbulent and murky waters as they try to retrieve the black box data recorder from the tail section of the crashed Air Asia plane. Ron Corbin has more.
Indonesian authorities, backed by an international team of more than 80 Navy divers, were hoping Thursday to raise the tail section containing the black box of the downed AirAsia flight from the bottom of the Java Sea. Despite discovering the plane's tail section Wednesday on the sea floor about 30 meters deep, divers struggled to reclaim the flight data recorder, which is considered critical to determining what happened in the December 28 crash. Vessels with heavy lifting cranes are on standby waiting to raise the section from the seabed. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
There are no survivors among the 162 people on board the doomed airliner. Only 43 bodies have been recovered so far. The United States says it will close more than a dozen bases in Europe, a move the Defense Department expects will save $500 million per year when fully implemented. The list of European base closures announced Thursday includes operations at Royal Air Force Base Mildenhall, northeast of London. The base closure is among the largest since the end of the Cold War. And top-level talks on normalizing relations between the United States and Cuba for the first time in more than 50 years are set to open in Havana January 21st. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today it's Friday, January 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan launches his re-election campaign.
We will win this election on our program, we will win this election on our performance, and we will win this election because in spite of our alleged imperfection, the opposition is not an alternative for the growth and sustenance of democracy in our country.
Olisa Metu is National Publicity Secretary of the ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. Zimbabwe's former Prime Minister calls for a national conference to discuss the country's problems. A South African church evicts 400 Zimbabwean refugees. And Sierra Leone's president visits worst-hit Ebola areas today, Friday.
The president will also be traveling to lead the social mobilization to the rest of the country, starting in the northern part.
Abdoulaye Birete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone's government. A mysterious attack in Burundi may have political consequences. And French police narrow their hunt for Paris shooting suspects. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party, the PDP, says President Goodluck Jonathan will successfully win re-election on February 14 this year. Olisa Metu, National Publicity Secretary of the PDP, said former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari of the opposition All Progressive Congress APC party is not an alternative because his party has no winnable message. Buhari blames the president for perpetuating corruption and making Nigeria unsafe because of the government's inability to end the Boko Haram insurgency. This comes as President Jonathan on Thursday launched his campaign for his second term at a rally in Lagos. PDP spokesman Metu said Mr. Jonathan explained to the thousands who attended the rally his government's successes and plans for moving Nigeria forward.
We feel that President Jonathan should be re-elected because of what he has done. Amidst the security challenges that we have in our country, in the face of the global financial storm that we have, he's been able to stabilize the economy of the country. We have created private enterprise in this country and promoted it. We have dealt with the issue of the fuel and the queues that used to happen in this country. It doesn't really happen again. The most important thing that we are promoting for the re-election of our president is his democratic credentials. We have a president who believes in rule of law, a president who believes in free and transparent elections, one man, one vote.
Opposition says that security under President Jonathan has gotten worse.
And I'll deal with those issues for you. You know that in every major country, they have had such terrorist activities. It is not something that you eradicate in 6 months or 1 year. See, in France, when there's a terrorist activity, the entire citizenry troop out on the streets, and they condemn it, and they show the terrorists that they are one and they're fighting against them. In our country, it's not the same. In our country, when we have a bomb blast, or when we have an issue, instead of the opposition joining hands with the president to show these people that Nigerians are in one accord, they keep on issuing statements, damning statements. And there is no unity in fighting the security challenge. I think the blame on what we have in this country is on the opposition. If they had supported the president and showed that Nigerians are together in fighting the security challenge that we have, we would have achieved greater success.
Mr. Metu, what do you make of the allegations that corruption under President Jonathan has gotten worse in Nigeria?
Our party, for the first time in our country, created bodies to fight corruption. We created the EFCC, Economic Financial Commission, and we created the ICPC. These are bodies that you never had before in this country. We are not in charge of the instrument of investigation or the instrument of prosecution. The judiciary is in charge of that. But in terms of corruption, this is the first time in the history of our country that corruption is being highlighted. And it's because of the effort of the president to bring it to the front burner. We think that the opposition, because of their selfish interests, are not bothered about the stability of our country. And that is why they're condemning our president and they're making so much noise, deceit and blackmail and propaganda. But our people have seen the truth. Indeed, Nigerians are with the president and the PDP. We will win this election. We will win this election on our program. We will win this election on our performance. and will win this election because in spite of our alleged imperfections, the opposition is not an alternative for the growth and sustenance of democracy in our country.
Oliza Metu is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He spoke with me from Lagos. Sierra Leone's President Ernest Bai Koroma will today, Friday, visit parts of the country worst hit by Ebola as part of the government's social mobilization efforts to combat the spread of the virus. Government spokesman Abdullahi Birete said the government has also decided to extend an Ebola surge program in the western part of the country for an additional 2 weeks to contain the disease. Berete tells reporter Peter Clotty that the government has made strides to contain Ebola.
The government, alongside with the National Ebola Response Center and the Ministry of Health and Sanitation and our development health partners, we have decided to cascade the phase one into a phase two so that this time around, it is not just going to be a concentration in the hot spots we identified in the western area, but rather, it is going to be for the entire western area, which means we are now going to do a lot of flyers, billboards, PA systems, and also the entire western area, we are going to increase the surveillance as well as the contact tracers because of the positive outcome we have received so far based on initial statistical evaluation of the benefits we achieved following the 2 week surge that ended on the 31st of December.
So how long will the extension last?
The extension will be for another 2 weeks. Even tomorrow, the president will also be traveling to lead the social mobilization to the rest of the country, starting in the northern part. First, we will be flying to Gambia, then we'll travel by road to Potloko, Lonsar, Makeni, Tonkolili. And the good news is, by the time we go to the southern part of the country, in Pujon district, for instance, I think the president is more to congratulate them there. The reason being, they have not been recording any case of confirmed Ebola for the past 41 days. So tomorrow, if we go by what WHO is saying, then Pujon should be declared Ebola-free district.
The Mauritanian president, who is the head of the AU at the moment, held a recent news conference with your president donating some amount of funds to help with the Ebola containment effort of the administration. How much funds did he give and how will the government use this to help with the fight against Ebola?
Last Tuesday, the president of Mauritania, His Excellency Mohamed Ould Abdel Aziz, paid a courtesy visit to the president of this country and the people, and he said he is more in Sierra Leone to support the initiatives of the government and also to appeal to the international community to support Sierra Leone because so far there has been the political leadership in terms of containing the scourge. And this is where he also made a very modest donation of nearly $300,000 to the government so that we can step up in the fight against Ebola.
Abdullahi Birete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone's government. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital of Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 9th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. In Zimbabwe, the leader of the opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, on Thursday called for a national conference to discuss the country's economic, political, and social problems. He urged regional African leaders to intervene, saying the situation in his country was getting out of hand. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service has details from Harare.
Mr. Tsvangirai told a news conference at the MDCT Harvest House headquarters that his party is spearheading the convening of what he called a national convergence conference of all political parties in the country, churches, business community, and civil society organizations to deal with the problems affecting the nation. The opposition leader said the ruling ZANU-PF party would also be invited to the gathering, which he proposes should be held within the next 2 months.
In line with our Congress roadmap, we in the MDC are going to initiate the convening of a national convergence conference. After that conference, there will be a new roadmap agreed across the political divide to rescue this country from the current quagmire. The idea of a national convergence conference arose after a realization that national crisis is affecting every Zimbabwean. This is an opportunity for all of us in our diversity to mobilize the national sentiment for a national solution.
The former Prime Minister further said he does not expect President Robert Mugabe to be out of the country on holiday, especially now when the floods are wreaking havoc in some parts of the country.
We are in the middle of a very serious national crisis. National revenue has dwindled, the government is struggling to pay its workers. There is no predictability on the pace of government policy as such policies are being changed every day.
On the nation's increasing unemployment rate, Mr. Tsvangirai appealed to the Southern African Development Community and the African Union to intervene in order to solve the Zimbabwean crisis.
We have written to SADC, AU, that they must appreciate that the declining economic situation and the implosion in ZANU-PF as a party in government has far-reaching consequences for stability, democratization and development in the region.
Zimbabwe says its unemployment rate is pegged at almost 11%, but independent economists have put the figure at more than 81%. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo, who was not answering his mobile phone. But independent political analyst Sydney Masamvu said he doesn't see ZANU-PF attending the conference.
While it is a noble call, I don't see that feasible in the current political matrix, in the sense that ZANU-PF is the ruling party and they've got a Zim asset program which they've said they want to vigorously implement.
Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
More than 400 Zimbabwean refugees housed at the Central Methodist Church in Johannesburg face an uncertain future after church authorities order them to pack and get out. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The Central Methodist Church in Johannesburg has provided shelter for hundreds of homeless people for years after the 2008 Zimbabwean elections that were marred by violence involving President Mugabe's supporters and those of opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai. Thousands of Zimbabweans fled to South Africa. This church opened its doors for them. The xenophobic violence that erupted in South Africa later that year forced hundreds more to flee their homes and seek refuge in the church, and this has become their home since that time. But now the church authorities have ordered the remaining asylum seekers and economic migrants, largely from Zimbabwe, to pack and leave. The church's new leader, Reverend Ndumiso Ngcombo, says the more than 400 homeless people currently taking refuge in the church must find alternative accommodations.
We don't have any plans of evicting people physically, but we'll appeal to people because we have closed that ministry of refugees in the church, like any other ministry that we operate in the church. So we've closed that one, and we shall continue without it.
With the homeless having been sleeping on the staircases, in chapel corridors, on the floors, and all over available spaces, the damage to the once magnificent church has been huge. Noel Muguti, an asylum seeker from Zimbabwe, is one of those still stuck at the church after failing to find another place to go. He says he fears that if the church decides to forcibly evict him and the other over 200 people still living in the church, the only option left will be that of sleeping in the streets.
The anxiety is that as a refugee for many years, I'm going to be more by being homeless. I cannot go back to Zimbabwe. I cannot be in this church. I don't know where I will be tomorrow.
Reverend Ngcombo, though, insist it is now time to return the building to its former glory and keep it dedicated to song and praise. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This week, military officials in Burundi said soldiers killed nearly 100 alleged rebel combatants during 5 days of fighting near the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. As VOA's Gabe Jarslow reports, the government has released few details about the incident, but says it could be politically motivated, raising concerns of further violence before this year's elections.
The government has released few details about the incident, but says it could be politically motivated, raising concerns of further violence before this year's elections. Authorities in Burundi say they arrested 9 of the fighters blamed for the violence that started northwest of the capital, Bujumbura. Officials have yet to say whether they were rebels from the FNL movement, which operates in the region, or another group altogether. But Deputy Presidential Spokesman Gervais Abayeho says there is suspicion the alleged attack may be part of an attempt to disrupt elections scheduled to begin in May.
I believe the first incident whereby Burundi suffered an attack from the Democratic Republic of Congo could be politically motivated because, you know, the army who were involved in the fighting have said that the armed group were trying to reach one big forest in the area from where they would stage widespread attacks across the country ahead of next year's elections.
Political tensions are already high in Burundi, due in part to differing views on whether President Pierre Nkurunziza has the constitutional authority to seek a third term in office. Vital Nshimirima. Shaky phone line from Bujumbura. He says he is worried by recent comments from government figures and on social media suggesting the opposition supported the attacks.
And this is what leads us to think that it might be.
He says this is what leads us to think that it might be a fake explanation to actually take advantage of the same to arrest opposition leaders or some civil society members. Rights groups say there is little room for the opposition to operate in Burundi, pointing out strict media laws and restrictions on the freedom to assembly. Presidential spokesman Abayeho says the government plans to enhance security to guard against the prospect of more violence before the elections.
Whenever elections approach, there is what we call electoral fever, which is mounting even in this country. So the government is doing all it can to ensure that people are safe.
The opposition boycotted the last vote in 2010 because of concerns of vote rigging, giving an easy victory to President Nkurunziza. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
The search for two brothers suspected of being behind the Paris shootings narrowed to a zone near the French capital as France held a day of mourning for the victims. As Lisa Bryan reports from Paris for VOA, France has invited top U.S. and European officials to Paris for talks on terrorism.
Police appear to have narrowed their manhunt for brothers Sherif and Saeed Kouachi to a region northeast of Paris. That's where the brothers were spotted at a gas station early Thursday. The two men are top suspects in Wednesday's shooting at Charlie Hebdo magazine. At a press conference Thursday, Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve described a massive search underway, helped by dozens of witnesses and information from videos and mobile phones. He said 9 people have been detained for questioning. A policewoman was killed in a shootout early Thursday, and 2 people have been held for questioning. But Interior Minister Cazeneuve says there is no link at the moment between the 2 incidents.
J'ai pris l'initiative d'inviter à Paris.
Cazeneuve says he has invited European Interior Ministers and U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder to talks in Paris on Sunday to discuss their common terrorist challenge. France, as well as Charlie Hebdo, have been targeted before, but Wednesday's attack was the deadliest in decades. France marked a day of mourning Thursday for the victims. Authorities believe the attacks may have been inspired by radical Islam. Around Paris, people set up makeshift memorials and marked vigils for the victims. Paris resident Mariama Bungura was among the many at the Place de la République, where bouquets of flowers were piled up at the foot of a giant statue of Marianne, the symbol of French liberty.
C'est pas aux hommes de rendre justice.
Bungura described the killings as inhumane. She says it's not up to man, but God to render justice. Muslims like herself are angry at what's happened, she says, because it's against the Quran. Bouquets were also piled up near the office of Charlie Hebdo, about a mile away. Police have cordoned off the site, but a small crowd was gathered nearby to pay their respects. One man placed a bottle of wine alongside the flowers in tribute to the magazine's bon vivant spirit. Denis Triguer Desgarnier arrived in tears.
Ils étaient jeunes comme nous, et ils ont utilisé leur stylo pour défendre les libertés d'expression.
As a youth, Desgarnier said, he participated in the May 1968 social uprising in France. At the time, he said, Charlie Hebdo's journalists used their pens to defend their cause and free expression. He says the reaction by many French to the shootings is a comfort, especially because they're not blaming the Muslim community for the deaths. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Our time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Ivory Coast's Yahya Toure was crowned the 2014 Africa Football Player of the Year at the Glow CAF Awards ceremony in Lagos, Nigeria on Thursday night. He's the first to win the accolade on four consecutive years. Nigerian Asisat Oshoala is Africa Female Player of the Year. The Democratic Republic of Congo's Mubele Ndombe is African Player of the Year based in Africa. Algerian Desert Fox and Nigeria Super Falcons are Africa Men's and Women's Team of the Year, respectively. Algeria's Intensitif is Africa Club of the Year. The Most Promising Talent Award went to Algeria's Yassine Brahimi, while Algeria's Intensitif's Kederin Madoui is Coach of the Year. The Africa Legends Award is shared between Cameroon's Orex Club of 1964 and Mali's Stade Malien FC. The Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe FC President Moaz Katumbi received the Africa Football Administrator Award. Nigerian Head of State Goodluck Ebele Jonathan and Ghana Football Association Head Kwesi Nyantigi received the CAF Platinum Award. Staying in Lagos, the Confederation of African Football CAF and Nigerian Telecommunication Service Provider Globacom renewed their sponsorship of the CAF Award Ceremony in Lagos on Thursday. The new contract runs until 2018. Globacom have been the title sponsors of the annual award ceremony since 2005. Elsewhere, hosts Algeria beat their Tunisian under-23 peers 3-0 in a friendly played in Blida, some 50 kilometers south of Algiers on Thursday. The two sides are gearing up for the 2015 All-Africa Games and 2015 Rio de Janeiro Olympic qualifiers. In Zurich, Gabon are Africa's most improved national team, while Zambia have slipped by the widest margin, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich on Thursday. Algeria is Africa's highest-ranked team, while Djibouti is the lowest-placed national side. Algeria is placed 18th, Tunisia 22nd, Ivory Coast 28th, Senegal 35th, Ghana 37th, Guinea 39th, and Cape Verde Islands is 40th. Cameroon is 42nd, African champions Nigeria 43rd, and Mali 49th. Finally, Senegal play Gabon in an Orange Africa Cup of Nations build-up match in Rabat, Morocco today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Cape Verde Islands engage Republic of Congo. Cameroon play South Africa as Burkina Faso face Swaziland. On Sunday, Nigeria play Ivory Coast as Tunisia host Algeria. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omen, Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A United Nations Commission of Inquiry has determined that Christian militia have carried out ethnic cleansing of Muslims in the Central African Republic, but that there is no proof of genocidal intent in the ongoing civil war. The three-member commission issued its conclusions in a final report released on Thursday. The commission also said the anti-Balaka Christian militia and Muslim Seleka rebels have both committed war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Central African Republic. A man arrested in the United States in connection with a failed coup in the Gambia will remain behind bars as his case proceeds, at least for the moment. A judge in Minnesota said on Thursday that 46-year-old Papa Fowl is a flight risk. Prosecutors say Fowl bought and shipped weapons to Gambia before traveling to the country to take part in an unsuccessful coup attempt on December 30th against President Yahya Jammeh. And Mali's President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta has named Modibo Keïta as the new prime minister, replacing Moussa Mara, who resigned on Thursday. That's it for this Friday, January 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music and a whole lot of laughter.